it's almost the same with council sex stat in the number of years in the post nineties wars.
Well, I'll start with the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll be led in prayer tonight by Mr. Glenn Eckert from the Church of Christ.
My great heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity to be in this council meeting to hear decisions that might be made for the villages of this town. And Lord, I just want to pray for the council that they make, give them the wisdom that they need to make decisions that's best for this community. I also want to pray for our country that it be protected. I'd like to thank you for the military men that serve throughout this community, that they will be safe. And I'd like to thank you for our police department, who's here daily taking care of us and protecting us. And Lord, just be with this meeting as it goes forward. It will be your will. We ask that in Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you.
I think that's kind of thing is that it'll change for next week.
Your roll call, please.
Asking to pause, taking applications.
Frank?
Here.
Todd?
Here.
Dawson?
Here.
Shire?
Here.
Demeline?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
We have approval of the agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I do have a couple amendments, if I could. I didn't obviously make a mistake. The ordinances all belong under old business, not new business. I apologize for that. And due to the presence of a special guest from Fulton County Economic Development Corporation, I'd like to move the second reading of Ordinance 042024 to right after the approval of the minutes.
Then also would be changed for the next meeting, 16th or 74th.
18th, sorry. My gosh.
Make a motion to approve the agenda as amended. Second. I have a motion and a second. Can I get roll call, please?
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Can we have the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting, February 20th, 2024?
So.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Can I hear roll call, please?
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
All right, for Ordinance 042024.
All right, so I'd like to thank Matt Gilroy from Fulton County Economic Development Corporation and Kate. Kate, what's your title?
Director of Operations,
for coming tonight to help in this discussion about the pre-94 CRAs and post-94 CRAs. Hopefully be able to answer some of your questions that you have on this. And I have some additional information for you on that also, but I'll turn it over to Matt.
All right, good evening. First, I guess I'll start passing these around.
Let's go to Councilman.
Well, thank you, Andy. As Andy said, my name is Matt Gilroy. I'm the director of the Fulton County Economic Development Corporation. We're a nonprofit entity. Our office is located at the Fulton County Airport, and we are a nonprofit organization responsible for economic growth and economic development throughout Fulton County. Kate Huskins is the director of operations for the organization as well. I will pass out business cards for you with my contact information. Basically, I understand tonight is the second reading of the ordinance under consideration. So I prepared some information for you that kind of gives a history of the Ohio Community Reinvestment Area Program, the information regarding the current community reinvestment areas that exist throughout Fulton County, and the difference between pre and post 1994 CRAs. So we'll dive into this material. I'll answer any questions that you have tonight, but I will come on your next village council meeting and answer any further questions if you have them at that time as well. So with that in mind, does any council member have any questions that I can answer?
What is the difference between pre and post?
Good question. So in 1994, the Ohio legislature approved a change to the Community Reinvestment Area Program at the state level. Prior to that, village councils and boards of commissioners essentially were able to approve tax exemption using the CRA program at 100% abatement for a variety of terms. And that process, in that process, there was no negotiation with the company. It was essentially just an abatement that was granted based on the situation at hand. In 1994, the state legislature changed that law, but they grandfathered the community reinvestment areas that existed at the time into the pre-1994 law. So that's essentially why it's called the pre-1994 CRA. The village of Delta had a CRA that was created in an ordinance, I believe it was in 1992, and hence that pre-1994 CRA existed. Since then, my understanding is the village also has a post-1994 CRA. The post-94 program allows the community to negotiate with the company, and essentially the negotiation is with the term or the percentage of abatement, as well as the number of years of the abatement. In certain circumstances, the school board also is involved in the negotiation process if the CRA is over 75% exemption. So that's the primary nuance between the pre and post 1994. There are some other nuances. And the state legislature, through House Bill 33 last year, made some changes to the post 1994 CRA program. I did provide that information, which can be found on the Ohio Department of Development's website. So if you Google Ohio Community Reinvestment Area Program, the first top line, and you can find quite a bit of information about the program, both the pre and post 94, as well as the reporting requirements that communities and counties have in regards to the program and what information goes up to the state level.
Can you touch on the amendments, how they affect
the amendments
pre-CRA
to the pre-94? So when the legislature made the decision in 1994, creating the pre and post 94 CRA programs, they, via legislation, said that a community or county can change the CRA program if it's pre-1994 twice through amendments. The Third Amendment means that the program becomes a post-1994 program, and the rules of the post-94 program apply. So the Village of Delta has made two amendments to the pre-94, and one more amendment would essentially make the pre-1994 a post-1994 CRA.
And what is the post-94? How does that affect the residential side of things?
Residential can be allowed in a post-94. In a pre-94, it shall be allowed according to Ohio Revised Code. So essentially, in a pre-1994, residential was included. In a post-94, it can be included, but it's basically up to the local authority to make that decision. In the county, there are some pre-94 programs that after 1994, the community determined to remove the residential piece. And there are post-1994, those that have been recently created, where they actually created a residential abatement program to try to spur residential development. I will mention that you, as the Village of Delta, also have an enterprise zone, which is a very similar type of program for property tax exemption that can be applied for commercial and industrial development. And any community can also use tax increment financing for commercial, industrial, and residential development as well. I included some information about what those programs are and how they work in this document.
So along with CRAs and EZs, there are a couple other styles of tax deferment programs. One of them being a tax incentive, a TIF.
Yes.
Can you expand upon the difference between a CRA and a TIF?
So the community reinvestment area is a tax abatement or exemption. So in the circumstances of residential, commercial, or industrial development, a portion or all of the property taxes based on improvements of the property would be exempted for a period of time. In a tax increment financing, the community is partnering with the property owner to set aside money that is generated by the improvements for debt on public infrastructure necessary for that particular development. So it's a way for communities to pay for water, sewer improvements, road improvements, et cetera, by virtue of taking out debt, whether it be through the developer or the community, and then financing that debt by virtue of the increase in property taxes collected.
So obviously we're having this discussion because there is property that is currently in a pre-1994 CRA, and also partly outside that pre-1994 CRA. And so as a result, can you expand upon how a CRA and a TIF interact in that situation?
So a CRA and a TIF can be combined in an effort to achieve the desired result from the perspective of both the property owner and the community. And the way that would work is the company would receive tax savings through the tax exemption or the CRA program, and then the company would also be paying a portion of their taxes that would be quote-unquote TIFT, and that money that is collected would go into an infrastructure fund to pay for the infrastructure improvements made on a particular property.
So Matt, the property in particular that we're talking about here would be a residential development, which would make that scenario far more difficult because it'd be up to the village to then collect from each individual property owner whose property is within the pre-94 CRA and also within a TIF. We would have to try to collect that money from them on an annual basis on each individual property owner, correct?
If you're using the pre-1994, and it's abated at 100%, then essentially what you would be doing is asking for a pilot or a payment in lieu of taxes, which is also referred to as a donation by some economic developers. And in that circumstance, there's a written agreement for industrial and commercial development. It gets a little bit more complicated with residential. You're probably not going to want to use TIF and CRA for residential development.
One of the big
TIF and CRA right. can be used for, you know, large industrial developments and those types of things.
Right. When you have companies that have money and there's relatively low risk to the lender who's going to be lending you the money for that infrastructure, they see that they're going to be we're going to have a funding source to repay that. That's completely different when you're looking at doing that on a residential development. You're going to be very hard to sell that repayment plan to a lender to get the money to put in that infrastructure.
Yes, and actually in the document, I did share, CRA programs are being used in residential development for empty lots that front the utilities. Generally speaking, when I'm talking to developers that want to do higher volume residential, they're asking questions about tax increment financing. They're not usually asking questions about the CRA program because in their circumstance, if you're building lots of homes or apartment complex or duplexes, et cetera, they're mostly interested in figuring out how to fund the infrastructure necessary for the development, not necessarily achieving the tax savings over time.
So I can give you guys a real world example, and it's unfortunate that you had an opinion in the prior administration on how the pre-94 should have been used, and those two amendments were used up. The last amendment was to take in Nova, which was a steel company that was, I mean, they had every incentive of the world to locate in Delta anyways, because this is where their materials made and they can also recycle right around the corner, and expand it to where Nature Fresh built their distribution center, which wasn't going to get built anywhere else except by their greenhouses. So the use of expanding a pre-94 to those areas was really a huge misuse of that second amendment, because when you expanded it for Nature Fresh, for example, the village then paid between $350,000 and $400,000, I believe, towards putting in Fox Drive right out of our road fund, where if you wouldn't have expanded the pre-94 and you would have TIFed that property, like Matt was explaining, you could have captured the increased tax dollars from that distribution center, and Nature Fresh would have paid to put in Fox Drive through the TIF financing. That's what we're talking with Love's about up at the corner of H and 109. There are going to be a lot of improvements that occur on H, the intersection of H and 109, and probably 109. So we'll TIF Love's, and we'll use those TIF dollars to offset Love's cost of upfronting all of those infrastructure improvements that have to take place around their property for them to go in. And it doesn't come out of the village general fund. Not having the automatic pre-94 is essential, especially in like our large undeveloped areas over on the west side of town still. Any kind of infrastructure that has to go in there, we need to be able to utilize the TIF financing for. That's the incentive for those companies to come. They don't have to upfront that. In fact, way back when Nature Fresh went in, you could have used TIF dollars to install the raw water line and all of that stuff instead of giving them a 10-year 100% tax abatement and then taking out a USDA loan that they're repaying to install all that stuff. Not having the pre-94 automatic opens up several negotiating options on these with these companies when they want to come in and build. Learning all of this, talking to Matt, and reading through these changes that are proposed and what happens, I'm still going to ask that we approve the second reading tonight, but I'm going to be back in 2 weeks with something drastically different because there's a lot more that has to happen actually on this third reading. It's not just an automatic transfer to a post 94. It actually has to be sent to the Department of Development for approval. And then we can also look at that residential portion of that. And we could maybe, I don't know, Kevin and I are going to talk. One of the things I'm thinking is we actually do two CRAs, one just on the built out residential section that would encourage the remodeling and maybe constructing new homes on the infill lots. You also, because it would be post 94, you don't have to make it 100% for 10 years. You could set that percentage of whatever you wanted as a village council and that length of time for whatever you wanted. However, on the residential portion, the way I read it, it would be uniform. It would be like automatic, like it is now 100% for 10 years. If you set it at 50% for 10 years, that's automatic on any improvement or any new construction for any residential built in that area. And then do a post 94 over the rest of the village that would take into account just then the commercial and industrial, wouldn't be for residential. So as these new areas develop, we can use the TIF dollars to do the infrastructure and keep the housing prices at the entry level where, you know, people can afford them.
So two follow-up questions on that. So on pre-1994, in a lot of our readings and discussions that I've actually had with you, Mr. Gilroy, there is a line in put out by Department of Development, which is, I will just read it, has witnessed considerable variation from this interpretation. Many municipalities have invoked charter powers and grant less than 100%. Several communities also require individual pre-construction agreements. More information about pre-CRAs is attached below. Can you just expand upon what that is saying and what ODOT is?
Yeah, so actually that's on the Ohio Department of Development website. There's a link to the pre-94 guidelines, and in that document, it flat out says it's on the ODOD website. It says ODSA, that stands for Ohio Development Services Agency. That's the former name of ODOD, which stands for Ohio Department of Development. So they just haven't made that acronym change. But they did say that there are communities that they recognize throughout the state of Ohio that are using quote unquote charter powers in an effort to use the pre-94 program similar to a post-94 where they're negotiating the development opportunities and the exemption and the rate in terms of the exemption without changing the pre-94 model. I'm not an attorney, so that would have to go in front of legal counsel.
And my second question in regards to what we just talked about, in terms of a TIF, there are several criteria in which the school board is involved in negotiations over the processing of a TIF. Can you give me criteria of when the school board is not required versus when they would be required in negotiations?
A school board is not required to authorize a TIF when it is less than 75% for 10 or less years.
So anything more than 75% and 10.101 years, the school board is basically has a veto vote on that.
Yes, the school board or is a consensus also vote. A party to the negotiation process and has to approve the tax increment financing, and for that matter, the post-94 CRA at 75% or above exemption.
Thank you.
So where we sit tonight, and this could change in 2 weeks, but my intention would be in 2 weeks to just simply change this legislation. It would knock it back, I believe, because it would be a significant change. It would be another second reading, and it would just be legislation that would authorize a pause in accepting any new applications until we get all of this figured out and figure out how we want to go forward on the pre-94 CRA.
Would it be appropriate to table this?
Council can table it at any time they would like.
Would that have be the same? It'd have the same effect. It would just be the second reading in 2 weeks. Yeah.
If there's considerable adjustments to it, though, wouldn't it be?
If the adjustments occur between the second and third reading, it repeats the second reading. If the adjustments occur between the first and second, it continues on as normal. So either way, the effect is the same. If you want to table it tonight and not approve the second reading, it'd be the second reading in 2 weeks.
I'm a little confused on where you said you can change the pre-94 amendment. You can amend it two times, and the third amendment, it becomes a post-94.
That's correct.
So the one we're doing, this is the third amendment.
Correct.
On it. So by doing it a post-94, does that mean that there's no pre-94 anywhere, or does it not affect the pre-94?
If you amend the pre-1994 ordinance the third time, and you've done so twice as council,
right,
then Ohio Department of Development considers it a post-1994 CRA program at that point. So I think I was like 14 years old when these law changes were made in 1994, but I believe the intention of the State General Assembly at that time was to give communities the opportunity to grandfather the pre-94 in, with over time, communities are going to amend and change, and then basically they would amend and change enough to go into a post-1994. That situation has happened in Fulton County. The Village of Archbold made a third amendment to their pre-94, and now it is a post-1994 CRA. They made that choice and had a very similar type of discussion, I believe, about 2 years ago. In other circumstances, there are other communities that use the pre-1994 CRA program, but also negotiate pilots through my office. And those are essentially donations that companies are agreeing to make. Now, you know, again, there's some legal give and take. It's possible that a company will say, you know, no, we want the full exemption, and apply using the pre-94 without the donation or pilot. Whereas they wouldn't have that opportunity in a post-94.
Basically, when you come to the negotiating table with a company that wants to move in town, if you're in a pre-94, they're in the driver's seat. If you're in a post-94, the village is, and we can negotiate what we're willing to give them as far as the exemptions based on, you know, you can look at the number of jobs they're bringing in, the, you know, the annual business profit, you know, all of that can be looked at, and it can be a win for both instead of an automatic.
And so just a follow-up on Lynn's statement, and just for clarification of that going on council,
if we pass third reading and we amend the pre-1994 CRA, and the next meeting we decide it was a mistake 2 weeks later, and we vote to repeal that ordinance, it does not matter. There is no getting back to a pre-1994 CRA after this amendment goes through. It is permanent, done, no takesy-backsies.
Correct.
So.
Are there people right now, are there companies, whatever, right now, that are on the pre-94 that are still getting the abatement? And how would this affect them?
Any residential or commercial or industrial development that has a pre-94 agreement with the Village of Delta will continue to have that same exemption in place until the term ends. Anything moving forward, though, would be under the new rules. So essentially, they are grandfathered in according to Ohio law.
And if they were allowed more than 75% because they're grandfathered in, we wouldn't have to go to the school, and the school wouldn't have to approve that because they're grandfathered in.
Yeah, current agreements, but okay. Anything over 75% moving forward
right. Would
need school board approval.
Thank you.
Some of the discussions that we've had about the properties that we're talking about, new developments, a lot of that resides outside of this pre-94 designated area, which are currently post.
The one new one we're working after this year would have to be annexed, so it's a neither.
Yep.
The other one, about 75% of the properties are currently in the pre-94.
It would require an amendment to annex them into the pre-94, which would eliminate it.
We definitely wouldn't want to do that.
No option, legal post.
Correct. But that's also pretty much the case to get that.
I guess my point is, consider like everything that's inside this pre-94 is pretty well developed, aside from downtown reinvestment. Let's say we want to do a major downtown investment. We make this amendment, pre-94 that will not applies to that. Okay. My point, there's not a lot of undeveloped land in this. So what is the point of amending it, aside from this one residential area that we don't want to TIF, correct?
We do want to TIF. We have to TIF that for that to work.
Is it possible to TIF that without amending the boundaries of the?
No, that's why we discussed. That's why if you're just dealing with one company, you can have a contract where they're gonna pay you, even though they get this, they're gonna pay you. So you can, to do a TIF, we have to borrow that money. So we have to be able to prove to the lender that we're gonna have an income source that's gonna allow us to make those payments. We would have to reach that kind of contract and then have to collect from.
Maybe we're on the wrong. Piece of property here.
I'm on this.
That's residential.
Yeah, right. That's the one I need a TIF.
Which one are you pointing at?
The estate that is highlighted on that map I gave you. Where 75% of those properties would be in the pre-94, and I could not TIF that property and put the infrastructure in, so I couldn't do that development.
So for clarification, this residential issue that we are talking about, this solely this one by Bad Creek, is the main driving force for why we want to remove the pre-1994 CRA?
No. Okay. I would also want to remove it for all of the property that we have sitting vacant in the old industrial park, all of the property that we have sitting vacant south of Nova and just west of Adrian Street. There's significant portions of undeveloped property that potentially needs infrastructure if the right development comes in, that we wouldn't be able to really do if we have this pre-94. The biggest reason, in my opinion, that we want to get rid of the pre-94, and I think we absolutely do, is because it's automatic. We have no seat at the table really in the negotiations. We just can ask, basically. The post-94 gives us pretty much all of those same powers. However, once it gets over 75%, it also brings the school to the table which we need to have a good working relationship with our schools. They should have a seat at that table when it gets over that 75% mark. And it allows them to actually, what typically happens is if a company in a post 94 does go for 100% for 10 years, what the school will do is the school will negotiate. If they want their approval on that, the school negotiates their own pilot. So at least the school gets made whole on their portion of the property taxes. Then they prove them, the school doesn't lose anything for those 10 years. That's why the school gets a bite at that apple. I don't think that it's good sense for the municipality at all to leave in place something that is absolutely automatic 100% just for asking. And it's because of the fact that like that, you get companies building a distribution center that were going to build it no matter what, even if there wasn't any incentive. And all of a sudden they don't pay taxes on the increased value for the next 10 years just because they're in it. And it just doesn't make sense.
Well, we still do have the ability to invoke our charter powers in the negotiation. According to the...
No, actually he said he's not an attorney. And I think if you...
I agree. You didn't read it to me.
But if you read that original ordinance that was passed, there's a lot of shells in there, not a lot of cans.
So I guess my question for you, Mr. Gilroy, while we still have a little bit of your time left, what is the benefit to keeping a pre-1994 CRA?
The benefit to keeping it is I guess first of all, I'll just say, I'm representing Fulton County Economic Development Corporation. We obviously want to see business and that growth and industrial growth throughout the county, including Delta. Regarding the benefit of keeping it in place is to continue to try to push forward with growth. However, you also have the choice of using the post 94. If both or either are done appropriately, same with enterprise zone, tax increment financing, job creation tax credit. These programs are in place where a community has a lot of different options to try to put the best foot forward in order to get that development, whether it be residential, commercial, or industrial. So it's up to you how you choose to proceed and move forward, and certainly we want to collaborate with the village on putting our best foot forward. You have a lot of opportunities throughout your community in regards to business growth and residential growth. Trying to come up with the best strategy is really up for the local entities to decide. That includes village council and administration, as well as the school board.
Thank you.
Thanks. I don't know if we've met Kevin Heben. We've talked on the phone many times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told these guys, he does a great job. The big difference between between the pre and the post is the school. Pre-94, they come in, the developer comes in, and as Andy said, they get 100% tax abatement, period. Usually, your income tax or your real estate taxes, we get a very small portion of that as a village. 75% of that goes to the school. So the difference from a developer standpoint is a pre-94, they put 100% of the taxes in their pocket. Post 94, they have to pay at least 75% to the school. And that can be a big deal.
At least 25%, unless the school agrees.
School gets 75% of a post 94. Isn't it that number generally, right?
It's negotiated by the village council and the school board. If it's above 75%.
If it's above 75%. So what happens is with the post 94, if the school gets paid their 75%, they can't block it. They can't block that exemption.
So for my clarification, is it 75% or 25% that the school is getting?
It's You as village council would have the authority to approve up to 75% exemption. So that means 25% would still go on the normal tax rolls in that situation. And then essentially the school district receives about 65% of that 25%.
And I think to further clarify, we would have the option to set our own rules on that and say if it goes over 50%, we want school approval. Just because the state allows us to go up to 75 doesn't mean we automatically set that as the rule.
Privileges of being chartered.
Right.
Yes, that is correct. And in fact, you know, collaboration with the school board regarding, you know, how to apply, again, any one of these programs is a benefit. Typically, when I'm working with an industry and we're trying to site a project, you know, they're asking for immediate result. So if they're asking questions about sewer capacity or water capacity, they want to know an immediate answer. If we can have a fairly immediate answer about what the normal circumstances are regarding incentives, typically, you know, they like that, and it helps them just kind of continue to plan along the process. Now, that still requires a vote and going through the processes necessary to approve whatever that might be. But just coming to some kind of general consensus about, you know, what your strategy as a community is, I think, beneficial to you.
How many homes do you foresee this residential lot here called the estate lot to come?
That should yield 25 to 30 acre plus lots.
That's buildable land.
25 to 30 1 acre plus lots, and they'd be estate style. So the idea is the homes in there would probably all be north of 500,000 executive style homes.
And how many homes in the other lot of the regular residential style?
The way we got it laid out right now, I think we're going to be around 138 single family.
I know that you're looking at getting numbers on what the cost is and what the TIF numbers are going to look like. What is the time frame on getting council reflective numbers on the cost of infrastructure to go that direction?
The cost of what?
Of the infrastructure to roads, sewers, water.
So the way the process is going to work, I'm actually going to be at the school board discussing this Wednesday night at their meeting, just to get an initial consensus. So then we'll move forward with actually drawing up what the TIF agreement would look like. We got to have that understanding in place with the schools before we're going to spend a lot of money on engineering. Then there's some pre-survey work that needs to happen in order for us to put out the request for proposals on the full engineering work, and then that's when we'll start getting some of those numbers together on each of those developments.
Okay, so but just in spitballing, 6 months, 3 months, a year?
I'd shoot for maybe, I mean, if we can get things moving with the school, I'd like to be at that spot within probably around 4 months.
Is there any advantage in removing this pre-1994 CRA before we hit that point?
Yeah, I think it's good economic practice to, for all the reasons I've talked about, we don't want to be behind the eight ball and have some major corporation come in on one of these giant farmlands and have the option of this pre-94 still sitting there. I think we want to get to a spot where this is all negotiable by us, and we can get the best win for the village and the schools also, instead of just being automatic. So my opinion is the sooner we eliminate the pre-94, and go to post 94, and whether that includes a housing, whether it's two, we can talk about all of that and figure out how it best works for the village. But I think the sooner we get rid of the pre 94, the better.
I think I can't speak for everyone else, but I think I would like to have the post 1994 residential decided and settled upon before we move completely away from what's already in place for the village. I don't want there to be a gap in.
I don't think we can overlay a post 94 CRA within a pre 94 CRA.
The post 94 does give us the ability to go above and beyond 75% with the negotiation of the school system.
Right.
Right.
So our hands aren't tied if there's misappropriation.
And if we have a business that says, hey, you know, we have two giant greenhouses here and now we need to build a distribution center, give us a tax break. I mean, what sense does that make? Yeah, we pay based on a lawsuit, and I haven't gone back to see what the lawsuit was, but we pay the schools right now right around a third of the income tax that we collect off of Nature Fresh. So we can't really split up the employees that are working in that distribution center versus the rest of it, the rest of the greenhouses. But just based on what I've seen so far, I'd be willing to bet that after we take that third out and we pay the schools, that the village won't even collect enough income tax off of that distribution center in 10 years to cover what we paid to put Fox Drive in. I don't think a pre 94 is good economic sense.
Well, they're exempt anyway, because they're agricultural.
But they would be paying something on the distribution center. They're going to be paying something.
Yes. The greenhouse. They would have. Except the greenhouse.
Right. They would have. I there are so many reasons that I think the pre 94, you know, everybody talks about why doesn't Delta have money to do anything like this? And it's because none of this, there was no foresight. It was just all, hey, let's give them 100% and move on. We're not collecting anything. We're not using any of these other options to put this infrastructure in. We're just blowing it out of the general fund. How much could that $350,000, how much could that have went towards Fernwood that drastically needs done instead of putting in a road out there for a distribution center? All of this stuff needs to be taken into consideration. And the fact that this pre 94 is in place and it's automatic leads to that.
Who, in regards to the pre 94 and the ability to negotiate, who handles that? Does that go through the village administrator?
Yes.
Okay. So you would handle any negotiations on pre 94?
And I believe then it would have to be approved by council.
Would it have to be approved by council?
Yes. So I would handle the negotiations, but council has the final say on it.
That's on the post 94.
Correct.
Not pre. He was saying pre.
Yes, on the pre.
So, on the pre, there's no negotiation.
The pre one, the company gets it 100%.
So it is my understanding that it can be and normally is 100%. But am I correct in my understanding that negotiations can take place for a donation or a pilot to be paid in place of for a company looking to move into a pre 1994 CRA area?
There are circumstances, and in my previous role, I was in Defiance County as well. There are circumstances in a pre 1994 in both. I don't know if Defiance County has done this after I've left, but Defiance and Fulton County, where they, you know, a company, whether it's an attraction or an expansion project, was asked for a donation of their tax savings or a percentage of their tax savings to go to the taxing entities as it normally would. We refer to that as a pilot in a post 1994 CRA. In a pre 94, our office refers to it as a donation. I've never been in a situation where the company has told me no in that process. Could that happen? Yes, but it has not happened in my circumstances.
And I don't think any of our pre 94 current abatements have a pilot in place?
Correct. Not to my knowledge.
That is all I have for you, Mr. Gilroy. I'm not sure if any other council has questions.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
Coming out.
I'm going to ask if we could to have the ordinance read.
Ordinance 04-2024 is an ordinance amending the boundaries of the community reinvestment area established in 1992 for Village of Delta.
Make a motion to table.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. Have your roll call, please.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
And there's no names on the public comment request form. Correspondence?
I have none. You have in your packets the departmental reports from each of the four departments for the month of February. As you can see, they're all staying extremely busy, even in the winter months. I think the weather has contributed to us being able to still continue to get a lot of things done that otherwise we couldn't have been doing in the winter. So if you have any questions, I could answer them. I'm hoping to, in April, by the first meeting in April, start having our department heads, our department superintendents coming in and presenting their own reports, two per meeting. Hopefully we can get that figured out by your first meeting in April. It's my goal right now.
You're talking about having a report here?
Yes.
Would be compensated for that time?
Probably be flex time. So I'm gonna the philosophy behind that is I don't think Village Council, I think a lot of the issues that we're uncovering and we're dealing with today from prior administrations is because you guys get all of your information from a single source. And so that information is only given out in the way that source wants to. I think you guys having direct access to question and get information from your department heads at a monthly meeting is good sense. And it allows you guys to get information from a source, more than one source. I think that, I don't think you should ever go back to just getting everything from your administrator as far as what's happening in the village.
Do you think they need twice, both council meetings?
No, so we have four superintendents, and so two would come in each meeting. That's my idea. That's the working idea right now.
Are they open to that? Are they apprehensive?
They're very open to it.
You only get the information the way it wants to be portrayed by the individual. I know you love being here until 6:30.
Yeah.
Finance director?
Good. Andy, would you want me to say anything about that?
Oh, yeah, I mean, we can have that. So the whole thing with the logos, that came about, and listen, it's no sweat off my back. I think the village needs something updated. We're at a point right now where just everything's happening at once. We got a new vehicle. We have to put some decals on. We're getting uniforms. So the black's going to be administration. The gray is going to be employees. And then the blue are going to be the superintendents. And we got to have the logos on those patches. And it's just going to, you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to improve the professionalism, the team atmosphere in the village, and just bring it up to the next level. So if we were going to change the logo, now's the time to do that when we're starting to put them on a new vehicle. We got to get some other new vehicles this year and the uniforms. So this was just the one screen company we go with. I just played with colors to give you several different options. If it's something that that council wants to do, I think it'd be a great idea to get done now instead of doing it later and then going back and changing all this stuff again and spending that kind of money. If you don't, you know, we can just stick with the script that we have. I can tell you that I presented the one sheet to the employees, and it was a 13-4 vote. The employees loved the idea of going with something other than the Delta Green. So I don't know if that's the general sense. That was the idea of just keeping the paw print to tie in the schools with the village, but kind of also separate the village from the schools. So that's just food for thought there. So just open for discussion on it. If there's no appetite to change it, then we don't change it. We move forward.
I like the Delta Green.
I don't think we need to change it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at these versus that. I think that logo looks fine on those shirts. I think if we were to change it, we should stay with green. Delta's green. We're not purple. We're not blue. We're not red. We're not Patriots. We're done.
So sorry.
Well, we were talking about the sign at the west side of town. There was an issue with how that logo is, with Village being bigger than Delta.
Yes.
So if we stick with that one, we're going to have the same issues with the board.
That's why the sign is still sitting in the garage that we bought.
Right.
If we went with something like this and rebranded it, Delta is what stands out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we want. Yeah, stand out. We don't want the word village to stand it up. Yeah. We want Delta to stand up to be on its own.
Yep. I agree with that.
And I figure if you're doing shirts, if you're ordering new shirts now, you might as well go with it if you're going to change the
right.
Logo.
Well, it's not just the shirts, it's the new truck, like you were saying. And then, among other things, though, for the future, if we wait and don't do it now, it's going to cost us exponentially more money to change everything later, rather than do it now while the stuff's still fresh. The truck has nothing on it now.
Yeah, but all the other ones do. So early.
But this one's going to be considerably larger. Changing the logos on the other vehicles that we have is not going to be that expensive.
And we don't need to re-logo all our vehicles. We just phase it out.
Yeah.
So as we get new ones, we incorporate the new logo. And then all the shirts will be have the new one on there.
If we do, I would rather do one of these two without the Panther Paw on it.
You don't want the Panther Paw? Okay.
I would be curious if at all possible to reach out to the school and get some student designs submitted to us. I'm not sure what the time frame on that would look like.
They're on spring break. We're getting stuff done for the park. They're on spring break next week, so that's pushing everything back.
Well, I'm a fan of the black and green one if we're looking at anything new, but I also don't feel like this is the highest of current priorities.
It's just timing on everything. It's like the mayor said, if we're going to rebrand it, if we're going to change it, I know that in talking to some of the councilmen, that sign's not put up because they didn't like it.
Yeah, as an entrance to the village, it was not appropriate.
So what you don't want is you don't want several different designs out there, right? So you want to pick the one that's going to fit in all the situations. It's like a branding.
How much time do we have?
Everybody's size. They're just waiting on the go-ahead on the uniforms.
Outside of the uniforms, you have a truck that needs logo.
We got a truck that needs logo, yep, and there's at least two additional vehicles that we're still trying to figure out what the need is before we fill them.
Tony, what do you think about this logo without this car? 5 seconds.
That would be okay.
I don't, with the black shirt, that black's gonna just blend right in.
Yeah, it has well, like a white stitching around it.
Black shirts are upper management, so those won't be seen anyway. So.
That's administration.
And I think he's right. You'd have like a white stitching around it or something. And then the other on this, I'm waiting on a price, but the idea was to go with a light blue, same style shirt, and then we'd get two for each of the council members and mayor that you guys could wear to either meetings or events. Yes.
You're probably going to have to get rid of that drop shadow. It's probably not going to transfer well.
Yep. Or white. It's white.
Yeah, it looks like on the black shirts, they used white for the shadowing.
Yeah.
On the gray shirt, they used black.
Yeah. Now, they could also screen print, depending on the logo that we go with, instead of doing the embroidery. So that might work out better that way too, depending on what we end up with.
Is office staff wearing it too?
The black, yes.
No like polos or anything? Just straight like that?
All short sleeve. And all like that. That was their choice.
It was.
Although they did ask for like some dress up Fridays so they could wear their own clothes again.
Because we have a lot of clothes.
I know, right? They're going to be excited for pajama day. I was happy with black.
I feel like that's very manly, like not
female-ish. Well, that's the men's shirt. There's a female. There's a female cut shirt, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wouldn't want to work in an office where I had to wear a uniform. I just wouldn't. I don't think office. I don't know. They know they work for Delta when they're because then they're behind the desk, huh?
They said they voted on it and they were fine with it.
But did they not have a choice? They say here we're gonna have uniforms.
No, we could have went with polos. We could have, but this
I'm
was
sure
the
they,
choice.
I'm sure, the catalog polo option.
Yes.
Very large catalog.
What do we got to do for a logo?
So I guess if there's one that's a consensus on council, that's the one that will.
Which what you said the village liked, the employees like this one?
The employees, yeah.
Or the black cloth. The black cloth.
Yep.
I feel like if they're the ones wearing it, then.
Well, we might
yeah,
be
but
too.
It's on the trucks too.
Oh, that's, well, we don't have to wear it as often as they have to.
They have to wear this every day.
Right. Only have to wear it at special events.
So this is also going to be. The new face of the village. This isn't
yes.
just going to be uniform. This is going to be village wide.
Correct. This is the brand.
This is not going to be just shirts that we see when we come to the office. This is going to be on any new sign we put up. This is going to be on trucks everywhere. So I think, as much as I respect and value the opinion of our limited number of employees, our village is much larger than that. I would love to get a say, which is, again, timing and the whole kit and caboodle, but I think the village would have somewhat of a say in what their logo, if it is changed, is going to be changed too.
I fully understand that sentiment, but that you are never going to get a consensus on
exactly.
something like this.
It's
yeah.
Can we get a couple more options? Nah, this is the same option in 7 different variations of color. 8. Is that possible?
Yeah, I can work on that for a couple weeks.
Is this something that needs to be voted on in a meeting?
No,
it does
so
not.
We could just
oh.
do this via text or whatever
yeah.
outside of the council meeting for time purposes.
Yeah, you just can't deliberate. If you want to tell Andy which, I would say one-on-one, tell him which one that you would like, that's fine.
Okay.
This isn't a resolution.
It is not.
Nope. All right, I'll get a couple of the design options. Is there a consensus on absolutely must contain Delta green or not?
I would like it to be green, specify my families. I think it either needs to be green or it needs to in some way represent the school. The green in my mind represents the school.
I mean, just pointing out that the school's own logo is mostly black.
Right. When we paint Panther paws in driveways, though, they're green.
The school's Panther paws black.
I think there should be some representation of the school in the logo. So whether we choose that to be a paw or otherwise, I think it needs to be represented. The school is a big part of this community.
Don't agree. One, two, three. Tony, you're saying no to school, right?
I like the green.
But then that settles it right there. It's going to have some Delta green in it.
I knew it. Mine would be the deciding.
When I look at these, I think of Pelican.
Huh?
When I look at these other ones, I think of Pelican.
All right, I'll get some other design options, but it'll incorporate some Delta green.
Okay, so we get on that now? All right, finance director.
Approval of invoices.
So moved. I have a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call, please?
Wait a minute, question. Go ahead, John.
There's a purchase power PO 1900 for $1,000.
That's our postage.
Oh, okay. And then there's another one for Nick Kessler for $12,000 and some. Didn't we just pay him $12,000 and some last time?
We did make it. I don't remember what it was last time, but yes, this is a second payment.
Is it the final?
I don't think it's.
No, final will come until they're done with the hallway carpeting, too.
Did we have to get that one now?
No, we did not. The bid threshold is 75 now. And I called probably four different contractors, and he was the only one that returned my phone call.
In a second?
In
okay.
A second.
Demoline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Law director?
I have nothing, Mayor. Thank you.
Police chief?
I have nothing. How much do you have to do?
Anything from the finance committee?
No.
Rules and ordinances.
We have a meeting tonight, and we'll have another one next before the next meeting on March 18th at 5.
Board services. Development and government relations. Safety. Property. Yeah. Old business. We have ordinance 052024, second reading.
Ordinance 0. You want to read it?
We did 04.
Yeah, we did.
Prior.
We moved it forward. Very good. Oh, 05.
Ordinance 05-2024 is an ordinance amending the compensation plan structure and administration manual addressing wages and certain positions of the Village of Delta.
Motion approved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call, please?
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
We're just doing the second reading on that one.
Yep, second, yep.
All right, ordinance 06-2024, second reading.
Ordinance 06-2024 is an ordinance establishing positions and wages for certain employees of the Village of Delta.
Motion to approve. Have we got a job description yet?
I promise them in 2 weeks. I started them, I haven't gotten them finished.
So we'll have them by the vote for the reading?
Yes.
I have a motion to approve.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
No.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Questions related to today's council proceedings? Move in to executive session.
So I'd ask for a motion to adjourn to executive session at 6:42 p.m. To consider ORC 121.22G1 to consider the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, inviting the administrator, the law director, and the police chief.
Make a motion as recommended.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call, please?
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yeah.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Okay, you guys don't have.
Can I get a roll call, please? It's 7-1.
Oh, yeah, that cracks up.
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
You're gonna.
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Disappointing motion.
Okay. Okay. And inviting?
Administrator, council.
That's it.
And law director.
Okay.
Okay. I would like to make a motion for an executive session.
You want me to read it?
Yeah.
Under section 121.22G1 to consider the employment discipline and demotion of a public employee, inviting the administrator and the law director at 7:12 p.m.
So moved.
I have a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call, please?
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
Todd?
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
The next regular meeting of the Village of Delta will be Monday, March 18th at 5:30 p.m. With a rules and ordinance meetings at 5 p.m. same day. I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Let me see how he's done.
Johnson?
We're gonna.
Yes.
Really.
Frank?
Yes.
Todd?
Yeah.
Yes.
Dawson?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Demeline?
Yes.
Comes to this kind of stuff. Do we get more reason?
Yeah, well, 7:29.
Yeah, right. Why don't we talk about that?